Okay, everybody, how you doing? It's another Tuesday edition of The Eve of the Revolution. And tonight we have Bob Branch, who I've had the pleasure to interview several times back at the beginning of the year when he was running for Congress. Hold on a second here. I got a phone call. Hello?
Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm listening in.
Yeah, I need to use that phone line for Bob calling in.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any other number I can call in on?
Not right now. You could Skype in, but let me get set up first.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Okay, that was Gary. Gary is very interested in this because we're going to be talking about the is it time to dissolve the government? I don't know if you all have seen the article that the Gary Hunt had written. Articles of dissolution, no, or declaration of dissolution of the government, and it's pretty much a mirror with some adjustments to the Declaration of Independence. And that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the United States federal government and the state governments and the county governments. Have they enacted enough acts of sedition and treason to warrant them being replaced and so forth? So while we're waiting for Bob to call, let's see if I can find out where he is. He was supposed to be calling in. Hold on a second. Okay, while I'm waiting for Bob to call, let's see, is Freebird back? I'm going to bring him on here. Nope, he's not back either. Boy, where is all these people? I have it under good authority that Mike, since he's not being very successful as a militia community organizer, is going to go back to his part-time gig as an Elvis impersonator and so forth. So we'll be good to be looking for that. I think he'll be hitting Vegas pretty soon here. All right, so let's talk about, let's do our trivia. Everybody ready to do trivia? So our trivia question is, who said this? This is a quote, okay? Apt quote. The real unhappy person, hold on a second. Yeah, Gary?
Okay, hi.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Bob to call.
Oh,
so he has to
okay.
Call. Yeah, so when he calls, you're going to end up going on hold. So, but you can hang on while I'm talking here, okay?
Okay, yeah.
All right. So,
right.
So let me go finish my quote here. All right, the trivia quote. The real unhappy person is the one who leaves... Oh, shit, what the hell is it? So leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. Who said that? There's a famous philosopher who said that. I'll give you a hint. He's not from America and not from this century. One more time. The real unhappy person is the one who leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. Don't know what the prize is because I'm waiting for Freebird to get on the air to tell us what the prize is. Oh, wait, it's the fighting knife. And as always, call in the number at the end of the show, the last 15 minutes, I'll call in and say it's time for the trivia question and so forth. So with that, we have Gary again. And while we're waiting for Bob to call, Gary, you got any updates? Anything you want to share with us?
No, look, glad that we're going to be talking about dissolution of government. I think that's probably the best solution because everything else seems to fail.
Well, did I send you the Tim Turner thing? I thought I did.
I don't. Haven't seen it.
Okay. There was an email sent to me about Tim Turner. Oh, here comes Dr. Branch. Hold on. Bob, you there?
I'm there, Joe. How are you today?
Good, good, good. Hold on a second. I'm going to include you in our another person, so we're going to be doing a com. Let's see if this works. All right. Gary Hunt, are you there?
Yes.
Dr. Branch, are you there?
I am, Joe.
Gary, meet Dr. Branch. Dr. Robert Branch, meet Gary Hunt.
Good to meet you, Dr. Branch.
Gary, how are you today?
Just fine.
Hey, so, nice Bob, did you get a chance to hear my trivia question?
You know, Joe, we've been scrambling to get on the air.
Okay, but you made it.
I made it. I apologize for not hearing your trivia question.
Well, let me give it to you one more time. We do a trivia every Tuesday, and we give away something that in the Patriot store. Okay, the real unhappy person is the one who leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. Which famous philosopher said that? And the hint is that he's not from this century. We have the people call in at the last 15 minutes of the quarter to seven and so forth. Okay, so reason that let me back up and give a little history of Bob and I. I met Bob on the air at that other station, and he was running at the time for a congressman, 3rd Congressional District in Arizona. And Bob is a Second Amendment supporter, NRA member, service member, football player, general all-around smart, good guy, and the kind of people that we need to have in D.C. to put some common sense into this government, which I'm afraid that we failed again with this election. And Bob put up a good fight and so forth, but I think that it was just, you know, my take on it, Bob, is that it was just one of those things where it was already decided since it was Dan Quayle's kid that you were running against. And is he as dumb as his dad? Tell me that's not so. Tell me he's a little smarter than his father is.
Well,
You are the politician. Did the apple fall close or far from the tree?
Far from the tree.
Okay.
But maybe not in the good direction.
Can't say anything bad about a quail in Wickenburg, though.
There you go.
Well, you know, Clinton in the hand was better than a bush in the or a quail in the bush.
Well, somebody even said they don't even know how to spell quail correctly.
They don't, because it's Q-U-A-Y-L-E, I believe, isn't it?
They throw a Y in there. That's correct.
Yeah. So, but that's, you know, I'll tell you where that comes from, though. That comes from because when my ancestors immigrated here, our last name had a J in it, and they changed it to a Y.
Oh, okay.
Because IJ is the same. It's an old European Gothic for a Y, basically. IJ. That's how it's pronounced. So anytime you see an IJ, it's pronounced as a Y. But it's very confusing to people in the United States, so they'll put a Y there and so forth. But
there you go.
All right. So let me talk a little bit about some stuff, and you guys can comment on this stuff. We are going to talk. The subject is the dissolution of the government, you know, where do we sit and so forth. But, you know, you got to love DHS. Oh, my God. Now they want to put, snitches in Walmarts and so forth? Like, I guess that's where all the terrorists go to get their basic ingredients and so forth. You know? I read this stuff and I'm just like, God, you know, are these people serious? Then today was December 7th, was that everybody, besides being Pearl Harbor Day, but everybody was supposed to pull their money out of the banks in Europe. I don't know how successful that was, but it was sort of like kind of steam rolling and getting a little momentum here and so forth. And then I heard somewhere that the FBI was going to investigate anybody who actively supported that people pulled the money out of the banks to try to crash the banking system and so forth. So I guess I'll be investigated one more time and so forth. So if you hear the door come crashing down in the middle of the broadcast, you know what happened. sad to say, Elizabeth Edwards died, and this is a person who didn't deserve the last couple years of her husband, who was, I don't know how I can just, I don't know. There's I don't have the words that I could say. Even though this is an R-rated station, I don't think I could say the words on air to describe that person. And this was a guy that was going to run for the president of the United States of America. And the scary thing is that he could have been elected, right? I mean, he lost out to Clinton, which lost out to Obama, but there was a good chance that he could have been there and so forth.
Well, the reality is if you look at his votes, which were more moderate, they would have went to Clinton, which would have gave her more delegates, which would have given her more states, which means Obama would have lost.
Yeah.
And Clinton would have won the nomination.
Now, that would have been scary.
Well, he did turn that entire tide because he did run. He did take delegates away from Clinton that gave to Obama, so...
Yeah, so, but, you know, his wife, you know, the whole thing about what, you know, the morality of what he did to his wife and so forth, all the time espousing the virtues of himself. Who's that? Spitzer is another one that's like that. You know, here's the guy's going after all these gangsters, and then you look at all the, you know, and I'm not condemning him for what he did, okay? But what I'm condemning him for... the way he was so hypocritical about it, you know. But then again, the hypocrisy seems to be a general trait amongst most of our politicians at this point, which is one of the reasons why we're in a situation. Also, stupidity also runs rampant. I'll give you a classic example. Mike Huckabee, another person who aspires to be the president, says that Julian Assange should be arrested for treason. I guess he didn't realize that he's not a citizen of this country. So it would be really hard to arrest him for treason. And then Lieberman, being the great guy he is, he wants to have him shot. Oh, who else wants to have him shot? Let's just shoot the guy for releasing secrets that the government shouldn't be keeping secret. You know, taking a line from John F. Kennedy that, you know, secret societies are repugnant, right? So, you know, it's like basically Hillary and you know, the past couple administrations got caught with an awful lot of damning evidence about our foreign policy being somewhat not, I don't know, what's the term, above board as such and so forth, considering there's a lot of real backdoor dirty deals happening and so forth, especially with a lot of people who were supposedly trying to engender democracy to and so forth. But, you know, it blows my mind, the hypocrisy of some of these people and the stupidity of some of these people. And they make it on national TV, and so the fact that no one calls them on it just goes to show you how dumb the sheep are and so forth. But, anyway, the only other thing I want to talk about is the Gulf Stream is definitely dying. You can see it in Europe. The last time that happened was almost 12,000 years ago when the Gulf Stream got polluted with too much fresh water from a melt in the upper Michigan Peninsula that ran down to Mississippi. They have proof of this, and the same thing is happening again. I don't think it's a fluke because it's been almost a week and a half that they've had the Arctic-type weather. And there are a lot of ramifications from this because heating oil in Europe is like 4 or 5 times the cost of what it is here, plus it all has to go through Ukraine. And it's all controlled by the Russians. So Europe is in deep, deep trouble. You know, not to mention the Euro crash and so forth. But you know, this winter freeze is going to cause a lot of havoc and a lot of problems for Europe and so forth. So we need to keep an eye on that. So having said all that good pieces of news and so forth, let's talk about our government as it sits and so forth. And Gary has written a document called the Declaration of Dissolution of Government, which is not a very far throw from the original Declaration of Independence. And if you take a look at some of the things that we're facing now, it's not unlike what our forefathers were facing 235 years ago. I think we can all agree on that, correct?
Right.
Well, I see a lot.
Yeah. And so the thing is that, you know, how much more do we endure? Do we think we're going to go through another election cycle? Which I don't think. I personally thought we were lucky to make it this far and so forth. And at what point do we, you know, do we say, okay, it's time to dissolve the existing government as it is, go back to the original 10 amendments and work from that as a baseline? And, you know, like Freebird and I were discussing it, there are some changes that needs to be made in the Constitution to reflect modern times, because it was based upon, you know, life during the tail end of the 1700s, and there were only 13 colonies in existence at the time, and so forth. You know, but in my mind, you know, I follow the code that everything should start from the family, and everything should be a bottom up type of governing, and so forth. So, where do we sit? Let Bob, since you were running for office, where do you think? Where do you sit on that?
Well, you said a lot. So which aspect? You know, I was still reflecting on the last aspect when you said, you know, everything should start with the family. I think that we would agree with that. However, with the nanny nation that's being built right now, where is the family? Is the big question. Mm-hmm. You know, in my election, I ran against the person that it came out during the election that he, for a semi-pornographic website, was an author. He wrote under the name Brock Landers. Mm-hmm. And he wrote in there his moral compass was so screwed up that it's a miracle that he found the parking lot. And I lost against this guy because only 17% of the people that were registered to vote even decided to cast a vote. So the question is, where is the family? Where's the family, you know, where's the values at? And what are we teaching, you know, our children about?
Well, you know, and that's a valid point. And, but see, that I think has been a planned and well orchestrated, event, to erode the family values. Because when you erode the family values and there's no core, then you have to rely on big government, right, Gary? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, yes, definitely. But I think there's another factor that's significant. And Bob, did you run on the Republican ticket?
Yes.
How did you get selected to be allowed to run on the Republican ticket?
How did I get selected?
Yes.
Able to run? There's no selection process. I had, when John Shattuck announced that he was retiring, my core group that knows me, local Republicans, church group, family, friends, came and asked me to run. And that process it was a pretty exhaustive, but, required gathering signatures to run, knocking door to door, and getting signatures to be on the ballot.
I think Gary is getting.
Where's Third District?
Third District is Central Phoenix, north to Black Canyon City. So Central Phoenix, Arizona, north of Black Canyon City.
Okay.
And it goes from Peoria over to Scottsdale. So it's about 600,000 people.
Were there any other competitors in the Republican Party?
Sure. There was 8 others.
So did you lose in the primary?
Lost in the primary. That's correct.
See, in California, I know in California, the Republican caucus, to even be considered for a nominee, you have to get permission from the caucus.
Well, what ended up is I'm a state committeeman as well, and I'm a precinct committeeman. I went to the Republican Party and I asked them specifically.
Yeah.
And in a contested race in the state of Arizona, there's no endorsements.
Yeah.
So anybody that wishes to run can run.
So how did Quayle get in the mix? Because he's not from Arizona originally, is he?
Well, his family keeps a house out in Wickenburg all the time. They've got a big place out there.
Oh.
Well, and also I understand that you know, Marilyn Quayle is big into the media. Her father was big into the media. Yeah. And they have a place over in Paradise Valley as well. You know, that one of the ads that Ben Quayle ran was, he's standing there with two children in his arm, and then he says, I decided to raise my family here in Arizona. The irony is he was married 1 month before that ad, and he has no children. So
that, you know what they call that, Bob? They call that creative merchandising in the marketing world.
Creative merchandising. You know, another one, he stood there and he said, you know, I've never ran for public office or worked in the public office, but I watched my father.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how many surgeons are out there that, you know, would children do surgery on them because they watch them.
So if they ask you as you're doing a frontal lobotomy, so are you a surgeon? Says, no, but I slept in a Holiday Inn.
That's right. I slept in a Holiday Inn. But Gary, you asked me the question, though. Was there, how I got selected, was there a follow-up with that?
What I've seen, well, we've all heard the lesser of two evils choice we have when we go to the ballot box. And I've seen it happen many places where, I guess in Arizona they have different rules than they do in numerous other states.
Every state is different.
But generally, what happens is the more influence you've developed within the party, the more likelihood you're going to get selected in the primary. And the analogy of lesser of two evils seems to not strike home. So I created another one a couple months back, and it goes this way. The Democrats dangle a turd over here, and the Republicans dangle a turd over here. And now you've got a choice of turds. Now, no matter who wins, what do you get?
You know, mouthful of what, right?
Well, you know, I guess the point is that guys like you are too dangerous to be let loose in Washington, D.C., and they know it because there's too much integrity and there's too much honesty, and you're going to be like Ron Paul, you know, you're going to upset the apple cart. I'll give you a classic example. Look at Bonner, right? Bonner, before he became the Speaker of the House, he's talking about Ron Paul this, and he's going to audit the Fed, and yada, yada, yada. Now that he's got the job and the chair and the keys, what's the first thing he does? He goes, well, maybe not Ron Paul is the right guy. Because he knows Ron Paul is going to tear into Bernanke and give him three new assholes in front of public TV. Right? He's got, you know, that's what Paul would do. Paul would put him in a congressional hearing under the threat of perjury and ask him certain specific questions that Bernanke can't and doesn't want to answer and so forth, okay? So he knows that's going to happen. So Bonner now with Hammond and Hahn on Paul being in charge of the finance committee and so forth, which I thought, when I first heard that, I go, yeah, that there's a step in the right direction, okay? But that's not going to happen. You know, I'll bet money on that. What do you, I mean, you want to give me odds?
Well, I think there's another aspect, too, that if you had gotten elected, Bob, when you get to Washington, just say you needed had a well. Say that, what's that dam up there northwest of Phoenix, the Pleasant Valley? Is that it?
Yeah, right. Not Pleasant. Well, is it Pleasant Valley?
The big one, the one they just rebuilt about 10 years ago.
Sure. Well, I know Lake Pleasant. That's right.
Lake Pleasant. Yeah, the dam up there. They just rebuilt it. But let's, you know, another situation that arises, and this is how. You know, the election process, the ballot box has kind of gone by the wayside, but suppose you got elected and you needed, the people from Arizona needed $2 million to repair that dam, or it was going to flood Phoenix, or at least whatever that junction is down there. And so they went to Congress, and they submitted the bill, and it went into committee, and it stayed in committee, and it stayed in committee, and stayed in committee. And then you go back and say, when's that coming out of committee? Well, we've got the DREAM Act coming up, and we're going to attach it as an amendment to the DREAM Act. Well, I don't want to vote for the DREAM Act. Well, too bad. That's where we're putting it. The ability to manipulate and control the outcome, unless we had 51% in both the House and the Senate, is unbelievable. Because the you know, I think the hardcore Republicans, the party people, and the Democrats will still gang against the newcomers. And I think we'll see that probably by April or May. I think the reality of the ineffectiveness of the Tea Party candidates is going to be demonstrated.
I think the reality is that it's just going to be gridlock. You know, I mean, and the thing is that Obama has the ability basically to do line action veto on just about every bill that comes up in front of him, right?
Right.
You know, and don't think he won't do it. I think, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know how much he's been cowtailing now because he's got basically, you know, he got bruised pretty bad. You know, the elections reflect the unhappiness of, you know, but the thing is that, you know, the average American people think that there's going to be a change. I don't see that really happening. All I see is that the Republicans now will be, you know, fighting for what their agendas are and so forth. And they have it in the House, and they don't have it in the Senate, but there's probably enough votes in the Senate that could be pressured, given the right circumstances and so forth. It's like Kucinich. And was it Kucinich and was it him?
Kucinich.
And the health care? You know,
right.
he was stoutly against it until he took a little airplane ride with Obama. what do you think what do you think he got? What promises do you think were made?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. The politics was made on that plane ride.
Yeah. And he was one of the outstanding holdouts.
Right. And I think if you had gone to Washington, Bob, that within 6 or 8 months of sitting up there, you would have decided not to run again, just go back and make a living where you were, or you would decide to be a game player in Washington. I think those are what we're going to see the Tea Party candidates do, is they're either going
to... Not to mention the 6 showers a day you got to take to wash the stench off.
To take the Potomac off your body.
Oh, God. Right? I've been to Washington. I was stationed there, man. I'm telling you, it's disgusting. You know, if you're a person that's used to standing on your own 2 feet... You get disgusted really quick. And the problem is that then you just get atrophetic about the whole thing, and you go, nothing's ever going to change. Anyway, so actually, Bob, I think it's a good thing that you didn't make it because, you know, there may be bigger and better things for you.
Well, thank you.
You know.
we'll see. Now,
Joe, you'd mentioned earlier that the Declaration of Dissolution of Government sounds very much like the Declaration of Independence. Well, the Declaration of Independence was predicated on John Locke's Second Treatise of Government. I think it was Chapter 14, when he talked basically about the concept of government and that we have no right to give up the government, but the government breaches this contract. It has disenfranchised us by that breach of contract. And so the primary element in the Declaration of Independence really is no different than today. The only difference is they wanted to get rid of the British, the Parliament, the Crown, and the whole royal system, and set up a new government. Today, that same situation is here. They breached the contract. They violated the Constitution. They've violated their oaths and everything, so they've dissolved the relationship with us, or as Locke put it, put us back in a state of nature. The only difference is we want the government that is our birthright, the Constitution. We want obedience to the Constitution, so we don't have to declare independence from England. We just have to tell the government that they're dissolved.
Well, let me take the airport scanners debacle and so forth. That's a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment. I don't think you could get a more direct violation of the Fourth Amendment than that. You know? And the whole thing about it is that, not to mention the fact that it doesn't do any good, because, you know, 2 shows ago I was talking about how, who was it that, another brilliant politician, Pat Buchanan, another guy who aspired to be the president, was saying that how these machines can check inside the body cavity and so forth. And I'm going, is this guy that much out of touch? He realizes that an X-ray machine can't do that? That's, you need an MRI or a CAT scan to be able to check inside the body, that so it doesn't do any good because you could hide a charger up the anal cavity and put enough C4 in there to blow up an airplane and so forth. So you're not really, you know, you haven't achieved anything. But what you have achieved is a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment, and they seem to enjoy violating the Fourth Amendment. You know, not to mention, you know, guys like Chertoff and so forth who are making buku dollar out of this because he was the one who recommended that, and then he became a consulting marketing individual for the company that makes it, the scanning company and so forth. But the thing is that even though there's an outrage here, what do they do when they hear the outrage? They say, well, we're going to start doing bus stations and train stations and shopping malls. So where does it stop?
There was a story this morning about a lady. She was an attorney, and she has a newborn child, and the rules specifically exclude from the liquid, 3 ounces liquid category, breast milk and other medical things.
And there's the other lady that they put in the glass room for a half an hour.
That's the one. Was in the glass room for a half an hour.
Bob, when does that stop? How does that stop?
Well, that stops when the people say it should stop, Joe.
Okay, so how do the people say it stops?
You know, in all honesty, when I ran this year, I really thought this was the year that the people were going to stand up and say it's time for it to stop.
You know,
I didn't see it happen.
The sad fact of the life is that there's not enough people in the United States of America. You know, the general population isn't going to do it. They're just going to sit there and take it. Okay, because that's what they're used to. They've been bred that way now. They've been indoctrinated that way. They've been drugged that way. Save for the few people. I don't fly because of that. Because you know what? I would get into a physical altercation with one of those guys, and one guy would be in the hospital, and I would be in jail. Okay, that's what would happen. So I don't fly. I don't put myself in that situation. And so the whole reason that tonight's show is that how do we make it stop? Well, after many conversations with Gary. And I agree with probably 70% of his stuff and so forth. The other 25% is basically semantics and personal issues. The thing is that I think we've gotten to the point now that the people of the United States of America are allowing the federal government to run roughshod over their everyday lives. And it's one of those things where they get away with it, and they do it, and they do a little bit more, and no one does anything about it, and it's time to push back. Now, the Tea Party was supposed to be the pushback, but I think the Tea Party got corrupted by big money. What do you think, Bob?
Well, it got corrupted by big money, but it also corrupted itself. I know that I've seen it myself in just the local area where the idea was to back candidates that the Tea Party thought, or the heads of the Tea Party, local Tea Parties, thought would also gain them political favors.
Right. Electability was more of an issue.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. They wanted, very much a kind of a quid pro quo. They had their own candidates.
Yeah.
I seen Tea Party set up specifically to endorse a candidate.
Okay. We got to go to break. We're at the bottom of the hour. Guys, hang out in there. This is a good panel. We're having a good conversation here. We'll play some more Elvin Bishop for the few people who don't know who he is. He's a pretty good guitar player from the 70s. And we'll be right back with Bob and Gary. Hold on.
If you got a good woman, treat her just like gold. If you got a good woman, treat her just like gold. Up the groceries, now you're working on the rent.
Okay, we're back with Bob and Gary here, and we were kind of talking about the disappointment, Bob's disappointment about old crony politics coming back. And, yeah, you know, I sense in your tone that there's a certain level of hurt from that, and I can understand that. But I think what happened is that a lot of people were disillusioned that the Tea Party was going to actually make a difference. And it started out that way, but it got polluted and corrupted by the old crony politics. You know, all of a sudden now electability again became more of an issue than qualifications, which is one of the things that, you know, drives me absolutely insane, is that, you know, how, you know, I mean, Bob, you and I have both run our own businesses, and we've both worked in the corporate world and so forth, so we know how to make money, and we know how to manage personnel and resources and so forth. And so, you know, how does a person that absolutely has absolutely no experience or skills other than watching his dad be vice president, which is what, that's like two tits on a boar as far as a career choice and so forth, qualify him to be the candidate in that district, other than the fact that he is the vice president's son and his mother's got deep reaching arms and political connections and so forth. And that's the problem. See, we have digressed, and we have reversed, ourselves on the evolutionary stage to that point, you know. Let's look at Obama. Here's a classic example, okay? You got a guy like Obama who was bought and paid for and manipulated, and you know, he won all of his, you know, he's like a guy that was, you know, getting ready to go into the heavyweight champion of the world fight, and someone drugs this contender, you know, and so forth. Then they put him in there. And this person isn't qualified to lead this nation. That's pretty obvious, okay? I mean, he's not qualified to do anything because he's never done anything, and then there's some other dubious aspects to his life that, you know, I think need closer looking and so forth. But that's what we have in our capital, okay? Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Barber Boxer, Waterman, Waxman, Reed, Schumer, Barney Frank. Oh, there's a piece of work, right?
Joe, I think I need a shower now that you mentioned all those
names. I'm sorry, Bob. Anyway,
there's a political power elite in this country, and they are the ones that have manipulated the system, whether it be on the lower level on who gets on the ballot or who's going to get party support. And then once you, if you do get elected, then you're that same power elite is going to control whether you're going to get a vote for your bill.
Let me before we go into the next aspect of the show, let me give you a classic example. Okay, the two Koreans or the K-Pen are having some issues, right? They both got lines in the sand, and they both got sticks on their shoulders and so forth, right? So what do? We go and do war games, okay? Now, Kim Jong-tu, or KJ, is a man who suffers immensely from many mental disorders, you know? But he has nuclear weapons and so forth. So what do? We're basically going up there, and we just knock that chip off his shoulder, right? Cross the line of sand with the war games and something like that. Now, if I were the president of the United States of America, and I see this kind of thing happening after North Korea NK decides that they want to bomb SK and so forth, and the Chinese aren't doing anything because the Chinese are basically wanting to see a conflict, I would think that I would pull my forces back and say, you know, now is probably not the best time to do war games in the Korean Peninsula in the Yellow Sea. Now, that would be the assumption of a sane, logical man, right? Bob, Gary, would you say so?
I would agree, but Dan Quayle would probably have his finger over the button.
Well, and so does Obama by sending the ships there, okay? But that's the level of insanity we have running this country. And North Korea has just gotten a whole bunch of really nice rockets from Iran, which have the capabilities to hit the California. Huh. Certainly Hawaii, right? So, you know, so it's like, you know, prudence would say, you know, well, we should back down and let things cool off a little bit before we do this off. Because, and then what good is, you know, why do we even do a South Korea, United States, and Japan joint military exercise unless it was a preamble to take over North Korea. Because if I was a North Korean, that's how I would look at it as, that you're practicing to come in and invade my country. So, but, sorry, go
that
ahead.
That means MacArthur was right, wasn't he?
About what?
Going, taking over North Korea.
Well, the Chinese want one Korean peninsula run by Seoul. No, and WikiLeaks has come. That has come out from WikiLeaks. Now, that was one of the worst kept secrets in the intelligence community for years and years and years, because, you know, KJ2 is just, he was just a little too off the cuff there for even for China and so forth. And China is looking at, there's a certain a unified Korea would be beneficial to China, as far as it would increase the amount of consumers, consumer base for China and so forth.
And get some crazy crackpot off of their border.
And then there's that, okay? But my point is that we have these people. Now, Bob, you're a reasonable person, I would like to think, correct?
I hope so.
Okay. I mean, if you and I were in Congress, okay, let's say that it was thrown in our laps and we had to discuss this and think that, I would say that our conversation would say, well, you know what, maybe prudence is the best thing. We just let all those guys have a 30-day leave in Honolulu and see how things happen.
Okay.
Right? That would be my take on it and so forth. Not to steam two carrier groups and then steam the Vincent over there, you know, to aggravate the situation. Also, but I know that China wants a conflict, because China knows that if there's a conflict, that North Korea will lose. And guess who ends up being the bad guy?
The U.S.
That's right, right?
U.S. But you also have to put Japan in there as well.
Right.
Because we're doing this for Japan as well.
Right, but my point is that the decisions are not, these are not decisions of sane, rational individuals. These are decisions made of people that are smoking crack or something. That's my point. And I think that's why we're talking about the dissolution of the government. How much longer, because I don't think we're going to be going in the other direction. I don't think sanity, reasonability, common sense is coming anytime soon to D.C. I just don't see it. I don't care how many more elections you have. I just don't see it. Okay. Now, there's a lot of pitfalls in the way. One of them, as so eloquently you put it, is the fact that we have debased the family values, something terrible. Okay. But not everybody's family values are debased. Okay. I don't think my family values are debased. You know, sometimes my son likes to think so, because, you know, I keep a pretty tight ship and so forth. But the thing is that, you know, I teach the morals from the from that level up and so forth, and not allow the government to teach me the morals and so forth. And that's where we've gone. And so how do we change it? Let's take the following things off the table. And I think that you'll both agree on me. Voting's not working, correct?
Right.
Well, there's reasons it's not working.
But
yes.
It's not working, okay? All right, so voting's not working. Holding signs about being unhappy, not working, correct?
That appears to be correct.
Okay.
Might be more effective if the signs were on pitchforks or rifle barrels, but no, there's no threat to government. There's no threat to those in power with
the
sticks.
Okay.
Right.
But on that note, okay, and on that note, you know, sitting with your AR-15 or your AK-47 100 miles from a flush toilet telling everybody how unhappy you are at BLM property isn't working either.
No, it's not working at all.
So
right.
What will work? That's what this whole conversation. Come on, guys. This is, you know, I mean,
the same thing that worked 230 years ago, Joe.
Okay, Gary, that's a good. That's Gary's. Gary is thinking that we need to dissolve the government. So, Bob, your thoughts?
Well, here's the issue with dissolving, you know, and, you know, I respect Gary. I respect Gary for actually putting a lot of thought in what he's doing and putting a base to it, and I really appreciate it. You know, one other thing that is not working is education. We're not educating our people to even compete in a global market. And not just on business, but also in a government standing to even understand.
Oh yeah. Don't get me started on that. But the thing is, who controls education?
The thing is, we can't ignore that. I mean, the reality is when 17% of the voters show up, and the other 83% say, well, you know, we have no say and we have no power. When the reality is, if, you know, 25% of them showed up, we would have had a different outcome. We are letting our government right now being ran by the media.
Okay,
and it's
let's talk about No Child Left Behind. That was enacted by W. I thought, and I wasn't involved as actively politically as I am now, I thought that, oh yeah, that's good, let's raise the bar. But when I found out that they didn't raise the bar when I had a child that was in school, I realized they lowered the bar.
They lowered the bar.
Okay. And I'm going, this is stupid. This is ludicrous. Why would you lower the bar? Because so that way no child will be left behind. Okay, but that's my point. That's the logic and the flawed train of thought that we have in Washington, D.C., and the people that they choose to enact, Department of Education, Health and Welfare, and yada, 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 to run these
programs.
Which
should be dissolved. Those departments should be dissolved.
Okay.
You can't dissolve them with the existing government, though. You know, the Declaration of Dissolution of Government is part of a larger document, and I call it the Plan for the Restoration of Constitutional Government, and there are a couple of articles that I've written on, Joe, I think you're on my mailing list, but I wrote one on the election process, I wrote one on the judicial process, on taxation, and on public education. Now, public education, if we go back as recently as 1891, where I've got a very excellent book, Elements of Civil Government, that was written by a college professor, and it was guideline for teachers. Now, the public school system then was local-based. There was no participation by the state or federal government. Now, then in, 1953, we got HEW, and the federal government got their fingers in, and they also gave the states a greater influence by funneling the money through
them. It was all the
and
money.
So we lost the whole concept of a community deciding what education they're going to have.
2 years ago in California, a Supreme Court judge knocked down an appeals for homeschooling, saying that it did not... homeschooling would not provide the proper indoctrination to good citizenship. Those are his exact words. And proper indoctrination to good citizenship. So homeschooling now is illegal in the state of California unless you have a licensed, registered professional educator. In other words, a teacher.
Or you're exempt like I am. Because I homeschool my daughters.
Well, see, that was 2 years ago. Your daughters probably were homeschooled before that.
Yes, they're homeschooled now still. They're 16.
All right. Well, I don't know what the exemption you have, but I'm just saying that now you need to be a licensed educator. In other words, you need to belong to the teacher union. Otherwise, you're not going to get
paid. Exactly. Joe, you just hit it. It's to save the unions.
Right.
And that's the union lobbyists, that's all that was about. And that Ninth Circuit Court is terrible, man.
Yeah. But the thing is that his wording was scary. The indoctrination of proper citizenship.
Sure.
That's scary. Those are some scary words. Now, most people would because they wouldn't understand the ramifications of that, and they wouldn't even pay one bit of attention, but Gary's on the right path. See, the education system is degenerated to the point where these are basically cookie mills, okay? And they run the kids through as fast as possible. Here in Calaveras County, it's like, you know, if my son has too many days off because he's sick, I have to bring him 45 miles Saturday to make up so they can get the money that they make for the kid being in school, right? Because that's how they get paid, by student hours.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Who cares what he learns, okay? Now, Ray got into a little bit of trouble, and we actually had to homeschool him because he got kicked out of school for seventh grade. And the 6 months he spent with me, his math level was at ninth grade. Okay? Because I was teaching him algebra, the theory of logarithmics and, you know, nomographs and stuff like I learned in college, because I said, well, if I'm going to teach you something, I'm going to teach you something you can use. I'm going to teach you the language of mathematics and so forth, okay? And so when he, and then I told him basic hydraulics and a lot of problem-solving things that are used in everyday life. I said, well, let's do a formula and figure out how many logs, how many cords we can split an hour if we have this size RAM and this size pump with this size motor and yada, yada, yada. And then the teacher who was actually doing the homeschooling kids was so impressed, I put together a problem for him so he could give it to his kids. So all of a sudden, he's fast forward. He's in eighth grade, and now the teacher's given him the exact same things I taught him in seventh grade. My son goes up to him and says, you know, I already learned all this stuff. And you know what the teacher's response was? He says, too bad, you're going to learn it again.
Well, I think, you know, let's define public education as it exists today. It is there for the purpose of teaching obedience.
Indoctrination. That's the word I think that the judge used. Indoctrination. I think somewhere you looked that up, it means that. Indoctrination is obedience without question, I believe. Correct?
Yes.
Would that be a correct assumption, Bob?
That's what I believe they're teaching, yes.
Yeah. And so
assigning a way of a philosophy. That's right.
Right. The thing that really bothered me was that when I was in eighth grade, I had to take the Constitution test. And the Constitution test, if you didn't pass the Constitution test, you didn't go to high school. And in the Constitution test, you had to know all of the amendments. There were only 25 at that time. And you had to know the preamble. You had to know the Declaration of Independence. You had to know who actually wrote the damn thing and so forth, right? And these things, they don't have that Constitution test anymore. To get into high school and so forth. So by the time they get to high school, when they're supposed to be learning a lot of the civics and stuff like that, they can't tell you what the Ten Amendments are. They couldn't tell you. There was one of our listeners who was fighting a court case based upon the Sixth Amendment, and there was she was in the bathroom, and someone who was in the courtroom with her asked her, says, "Well, what's the Sixth Amendment all about?" This is an adult. Okay, and that's why we're in this situation. Now, getting back to 235 years ago and so forth, these are things that were happening to the founders of the framers and the founders of the Constitution. Now, let me throw this out. A lot of these people, Hancock, the Adams, Franklin, Paine, they had a lot of financial things that they were getting hit with King George and so forth. So it wasn't because they were the astute patriots like we'd all like to think that they were. There was a lot of money involved back then and so forth. But the thing is that what they put together pretty much represents how people really wanted to be treated and so forth. Okay, and I think that's where we're at right now. So the question I have, okay, is that we're not working with the votes. We're not working with the signs. I mean, we haven't tried pitchforks yet, but I got a feeling that they'll bring guns and, you know, never bring a pitchfork to a gunfight. You know, that doesn't work. So where are we right now? So here I'm going to throw this out here. We got 5 minutes before the hour. I'm going to throw this out. If we had a document like the Declaration of Dissolution of Government and we had 1.5 or 2 million wet signatures, and we sent that to Supreme Court, House of Representatives, the Senate, and the executive branch of the government, what do you think they would do?
Well, the dissolution, you got to understand, is written to be done by a group of people, a geographic entity. There's a petition that's referenced on the page that would be the individual one. But I sent mine in to two senators and a representative here in California and didn't even get a reply from them. Of course, they didn't have a stack on their desk.
Well, that's all I'm saying. But they had 1.5 million.
Unless they had enough, and the reason the petition was written the way it was, so that only one signature per petition, and Jackie Junta up in Washington thought it was the best petition she's ever seen in her 20 years in government, but it was predicated on the fact that if 300 people sign, there's going to be 300 pieces of paper on the desk.
Yeah, so.
Unlike one piece of paper with 300 signatures.
I think 1.5 million on the desk makes a statement.
I think it would, especially if he's one signature per page. But when you've got electronic petitions, they're worthless. When you've got a petition with 300 signatures on a single page or even more, then okay, you know, well, they see one.
Okay, but that's a semantics thing. So let's say, let's say we're calling out to 1.5 million Americans who are patriotic enough to print something out like this, sign it, mail it to your senators and your representatives. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I mean, some questions that I'd ask. First of all, is it an election year? No.
No.
So no one would care.
Yeah.
You know, do you have the media behind you? No. So no one would care. No one would even know about it. If you have a congressional district of 600,000 people and all of a sudden a congressman's getting over 1 million, well, maybe they'd listen. But... You know, is the media behind your efforts? The answer is no. The media is not behind our efforts at all, any of our efforts.
So you're saying that we need, without the media's backing, that this would be another toothless effort.
You know, we had a discussion. A group of us had a discussion yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, the government control of the media.
Yeah.
That's not my observation, Joe. My observation is the media control over the
government.
I think
the other one was the tail wagging the dog. So
I see that. And here's the issue: is who's go back your initiative, your effort? You know, unless you do something, you know, that is very out there. You know, example, you were talking about those body searches and that at the airport. You know, if Joe Racer had the million thong flying people going up and coming to the airports in thongs, you know, Joe Racer's million thong thing. Now, that may get some media attention. But the reality is, you know, me getting upset are Bob Branch's saying, listen, I'm not going to fly. Personally, I feel like you, Joe. I'm not going to be violated. You know, and it's not that, you know, it's not that I'm afraid of anything. It's, you know, it is my Fourth Amendment right. I don't feel that I, you know, should have to subject myself to, you know, any type of search like that, that intrusive search. So, you know, so Bob Branch doesn't fly. The reality is, and you know this as well, you know, if the airlines industry are harmed by this, the government will just bail them out. You know, so even if we say, hey, you know, let's show up and a million of us show up and, you know, we're wearing nothing but thongs, right? And say, here, frisk me. The reality is if it hurts.
The first thing to do is they make you put your clothes back on so they can frisk you.
Well, there's the thing is don't have them, yeah. You know, and then the reality is you don't have clothes. But the thing is if the airlines are hurt by this, the government will bail them out anyhow.
Well, and that's you're right about
let's
that. Wait a second, Gary. But let me.
Okay.
You're right about that. Okay. That's exactly what the government do. But that brings us into even a more surreal aspect of what's going on, which is the Federal Reserve, because see what they're doing is introducing inflation, which is a form of taxation, and we're not getting represented by that taxation because they're printing the money to cover their inadequacies and their long-strung-out illegal wars and the failures of companies that should be allowed to fail and so forth, and we're having to pay for that by ways of the fact that our money that comes from taxes and the fact that when they print up more to make up for the shortfall from the lack of tax revenue, they generate inflation, right?
Yes.
So again, so we're being taxed without being represented because of their actions. Now it's
so are
kind of
great grandchildren.
It's a long, convoluted way to look at it, but that's the way I look at it.
Well, our great grandchildren are being taxed too without representation.
Our great grandchildren are screwed.
You know, the petition. We can look at the petition from both sides of the petition as the recipient, the people in Congress now that received that petition. But there is another side to a petition, and it was recognized back in 1775. It was called the Olive Branch Petition. Most of the people that signed that in the Continental Congress realized that they were going to achieve nothing as a result of it, but they willingly signed it because there were those that felt that there was a peaceful resolution with the crown. So the other side of a petition is very simple. If I sign the petition and send it in, and I don't even get the courtesy of a reply, not even one of those boilerplate letters saying, well, thanks for your thoughts, which I didn't receive, then on this side of the petition, the signing side of the petition, the Continental Congress, those that said there is a peaceful solution could no longer say that when the Crown would not and Parliament would not respond to the Olive Branch petition. It kind of sets in stone the fact that we have lost our ability to be represented in Parliament or Congress. So there are two sides to the position. Psychologically, the person that signs the petition realizes a greater sense of futility. I can't even get a reply out of these people. Maybe it's too many big words for them to read. I don't know what it is, but boy, they rejected me completely. So there are two sides to the petition, not just expecting something to happen.
I'm going to go on a limb here, okay? And everybody, we're getting to the top of the hour. We're going to have to go to break. But you know, the only thing people respond to and respect is pure, naked, unadulterated force. Okay, when it really gets down to it, right?
See, Joe, I thought you were going to say Oprah.
You know, let me tell you, Oprah gained 200 pounds. She's up to 200 pounds again. That made front page Yahoo News.
See, that's exactly what I mean. You know, that's the force. That's the force right there, Oprah.
Yeah.
The media, you know, the Jon Stewarts, you know, that's the force.
Well, that's you because the people want to hear it. All right, we got to go to break. Let's go to break. Convene back back on the show here, and we'll talk about this.
Too. This is the home of the blues.
All right. Sorry about the interruption there, folks. We had a little mind fart on my part. Okay, so you guys were in a discussion about community safeties and separation from England and so forth prior to the signing and the penning and authoring of the Declaration of Independence. Now, the one thing that I want to bring up is that there are, 27 signers of the Declaration of Independence, I believe. All 27 of those individuals were guilty of what the minute they signed that piece of paper?
Well, treason.
Treason. To with their lives. They were going to get hung if they ever got caught and so forth, okay? You know, if King George found where they lived, you know, they were dead people. But they were willing to sign it. Now, here's the thing, okay? Now, let's take all of the other aspects out of it. These people were willing to risk their lives for the things that they believed in because there was no redress with the King of England any other means other than to separate themselves and form the Constitution and a new nation and so forth. They had tied every other aspect of it, okay? And I guess one of the things that I'm bringing up is that I know, Bob, you're still believing that we could still work in the constitutional channels with the original Declaration of Independence and so forth and get back to sane and realistic and common sense type of governing and so forth. I don't think that reality at this point. I think you got a taste of it during your run for Congress and then what's happened since the November elections and what's happening now again and so forth. So at what point does the argument become null and void that that we're going to vote them out, for example? Mm-hmm. At what point does that happen? Bob, answer me that. Let me ask you that. I don't mean to put you on the spot because you're knee deep in a hoopla whether you like it or not.
Well, I think we're all knee deep. Any of the people, any of the patriots that wake up in the morning and care, and I think that we're getting to be a rare breed. But here's, I guess, you know, to respond to your question, at what point? My question is, you know, and this could be to Gary, is you dissolve the government, okay? And here's our Declaration of Independence. Who's in charge?
That's a good question.
Well, the same people that were in charge 230 years ago. Now, we talked about 27 people signed the Declaration of Independence. How much do we really know about what happened in Philadelphia back then? Do you realize that each of those delegates from the various states went up with instructions? Some of them were instructed not to sign a declaration. They sent writers back to their colonial assembly or provincial congress by then, in many cases, and said, "Can we sign it?" And the word came back, "Yes, you can." I think one state deferred from signing the or one colony deferred from signing the Declaration of Independence. These people weren't signing on their own behalf. They came out of local committees. John Hancock, for example, was chairman of the Massachusetts Provincial Committee of Safety in April of 75. These people were pushed from the city or county up to the state or colonial level, and then they were pushed from the colonial, selected as delegates from the bottom up, up to Philadelphia. So they were representing the people below them, and they would not go against the will of those people. They had quite often written instructions on what they could or couldn't do. In fact, one set of instructions I've run across was earlier on, if the motion is for independence, you are directed to return back here. You know, they didn't want anything to do with this. This is before July 1776. But the talk had been around by then. So everything was approved by the people below them. They were just acting as truly representative of the people rather than top-down understanding of representation that we've seen taught in schools today. So sure. there was a flood up of sympathies to, you know, this is too much. And you had holdout states. Pennsylvania was one of them that did not want to go for independence. But Pennsylvania was kind of interesting because the committees of safety created a whole new government. So there, for about 6 months, there were two governments in Pennsylvania, and the Continental Congress decided to recognize this upstart committee.
Let me break in, Gary. We're in, obviously, a very serious economic downturn. You'd have to be a total blithering idiot not to understand how dangerous
that it is.
Situation we're in right now. Now, two guys from my industry, T.J. Rogers, who's the CEO of Cypress Semiconductor, and Paul Altanai, who's the CEO of this little company called Intel, they were asked, what would it take and why is it that you're not generating jobs? And they're both, their answers were, the government is making it too difficult for us to do business in the United States of America, so we go overseas. It's not the labor unions. It says what it is, it's the government and all of the regulations that we have to go through to do business in the United States of America. Okay, so having said that, the government is in the way of us getting ourselves out of this hole that we dug ourselves into, which we're continuing to dig. And there's no, it, you know, all the government is not getting smaller; it's getting bigger. Okay, there are more and more agencies hiring more and more people to do more and more regulation every single day. Okay, we're not going to get out of this economic situation anytime soon, as long as we have EPAs, DODs, DOTs, DHS, Transportation Authority. Did I leave anybody out? California Air Resources Board? As long as we have all of these organizations whose only function is to continue to regulate, to continue to feed, to continue to grow, and to continue to become a cancer, we're not going to get out of this economic downturn. We're going to continue to spiral deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Okay? At some point or another, what's going to happen, enough people are going to be out of work, and we're not that far from that problem now. I think we're getting close to that, to eclipsing that number. Because the real unemployment has got to be close to 30% if you do the math, the basic math. And at one point, enough people are going to take to the streets and say, you know, I've lost everything I own, and now I'm losing my sanity, and so I don't know what to do. And on top of that, the central banks want to introduce austerity in the United States, just like they're going to do in Europe and so forth. And all of this is being contrived and being pushed by government. Our government is out of control. It's too big. How do you shrink it? That's what I'm saying. You know, I'm frustrated because I like to consider myself a fairly intelligent, rational individual. I don't know how to shrink the government at this point. I can't think of a way to doing it other than stopping it in its tracks right now and putting a freeze on everything and then taking a look at what we need to get rid of and keeping what we like, which really isn't all that a lot, and rebuilding from an original baseline, which would be the first 10 amendments, and going from there. That's my point. That's where I'm at. And that's, I guess, my frustration as a citizen and a patriot, you know, and a sentient human being watching the corruption and so forth happening and so forth in this country, watching what was a great country. You know, there were people in the chat room talking about growing up in the 50s and 60s. Well, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, so I remember, you know, the great times and so forth. And now I take a look at what we've become and so forth, a nation of consumers and not much of anything else. We have lost the ability for independent thought and so forth, thanks to the government. How do you fix all this? Bob, what do we do?
Well, you know, some of the things that I've seen with the states now suing the government, with the government now suing states, I think that you see, for instance, Arizona is big on this with the SB 1070 and, yeah. you know, other yeah. things that we've done this summer, but also the state of Texas and many other states joining in on this, South Carolina and that. I see a larger push to state rights or state powers, 10th Amendment.
Uh-huh.
I think the only way that we can do this is through state rights, state powers, through the 10th Amendment, saying no more taxes, defunding the government, bringing in Tea Party candidates to defund, you know, all those acronyms that you spelled out, the EPA, you know, and going with the Board of Department of Ed, all these places, including the Internal Revenue, defund them. And you defund them, you got them, you get rid of them. But it has to go through state rights. It has to go through state.
So how do you defund the IRS to the state?
Do you realize how many hundreds of millions of dollars are funneled through those agencies back to the states to buy that obedience at the current time?
And it's forced on it. And the latest one was the stimulus package. You don't want to go bankrupt state, you take this, but there's a quid pro quo.
Yeah,
if you take,
you do this, you don't get that.
And it's just
look
like
at education, though. If the government said, we're going to cut education funding, what would happen to the states? Because they have become dependent on the federal government to fund education in their states. So as soon as the federal government says, we're going to greenmail you, you keep pushing like this, and we're going to withdraw your educational funding, all of a sudden the state is without funds for education, without funds for road repairs because of the Federal Highway Transportation Trust Fund money that comes hundreds of millions of dollars to go back to the states.
Sure. And
they have us by the purse string.
And you have
balls, one or the other.
Remember when drinking age in a lot of states were 18?
Yeah.
What did they do to make it 21? Well, if you want highways in that and you want federal monies, yeah. you will change your drinking age.
Yeah.
The reality is you're absolutely right. We gave the United States government more power than spelled out in the United States Constitution. And
but, we become
here's
dependent.
The problem is that when you give up that power, they don't give it back.
Well, that's absolutely
correct. We've become dependent on the federal government for money. There's no way out.
And then so how do you – okay, I understand the philosophy, Bob, okay? I understand what you're talking about, and I agree with you 100%. But, you know, do you think we have another election cycle to make all this happen before something nefariously, ominously bad happens, like a dollar collapse?
My philosophy is to bring the candidates forward. The reality is
we're out of the election cycle, right?
Right.
We had the opportunity to do that when you were running for Congress, and we failed as a nation miserably, in my opinion. Okay.
Okay.
Maybe a lot of good people got elected, but you know what? A lot of the wrong people got elected for a lot of the wrong reasons, and one of them obviously was that they were electable. Okay. So now we have another 2 years to wait. We have to wait till November 3rd, 2012 to all over again. And my fear is, okay, because if we have a dollar collapse, all right, let me just go out in the fringe. We start a war in the CAPN and it goes nuclear. If that happens, the dollar is going to collapse, okay? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If we start another war, the rest of the world's going to say, these people are freaking nuts. They're crazy. I'm getting out of dollars. We're not going to take dollars anymore. Okay, Russia, China, Brazil, Argentina no longer want to take dollars for foreign trade, okay? They're going to take only their currency or gold or euros for whatever reason, but they are no longer wanting to take the dollars for bilateral trade. Argentina, who annually sells us 6 to 7 million metric tons of corn, sold that corn to China and took the Chinese yuan because they didn't want to deal with the dollar. Now, there's a lot of history there dating back to the war in the Falklands and so forth, but I'm just saying that this was a surplus that we counted on getting every year, and our grain surpluses are at the zero point right now. So, you know, we're probably a couple months away from a $10 loaf of bread and so forth, and $5 for an ear of corn. But getting back to the dollar collapse, if we get to the dollar collapse, Bob, then all bets are off. We no longer have a Constitution or a United States of America. And that's the thing that I fear the most, is that we have so many situations, or let me use, I'm going to throw this out there. Do you think Barack Obama is a sane human being? I do not. Okay. That was a good snicker. Thank you. So he's losing control in a big way. What if he decides that he doesn't like losing control and arranges for some false flag nuclear event, and all of a sudden we're in martial law? We have lost our country because we're not coming back from martial law, right? There's no turning back from that point, okay? So we have these situations that we're faced with, that once we cross over those Rubicons, there's no coming back. So the point that I'm making is that I don't think we have 2 years. I think before the next election cycle, there are going to be some catastrophic events, whether they're perpetrated for nefarious reasons by whoever is in charge of, you know, the Murdochs and the Rothschilds and the Soros and so forth, you know, or we make a statement now and say, look, we know what you're doing. We don't like what you're doing. And if you continue to do this, there's going to be a problem. That's my whole philosophical argument.
So what's the solution, Joe?
I don't have a solution. I rely on guys a lot smarter than me, like you.
Well,
I think one of the things, you know, one of the things we do is, which is not a solution, but it's sending a message, is that we send a message to D.C. saying that, look, you guys are blowing it, and we don't like it, okay? Now, we sent that with health care, right?
We sent that with health care, that's correct.
And what did they do?
They shoved health care down our throats.
Okay. Have you seen the videos of Pete Stark, who's in from Alameda in California?
I don't know.
Pete Stark is like just the most arrogant ass and so forth. He's like one of those people where, you know, if I were there, I would have taken that microphone from him, you know, just so that he couldn't say another word. The arrogance of these people, Pelosi, is like, you know, are you nuts? You know, grassroots is more like AstroTurf and so forth.
Yes.
The arrogance of these people is so high because they run with impunity the directions that they want to run. Dianne Feinstein was on 60 Minutes. They were talking about gun confiscation, and she said that when I decide the time is right, I will confiscate all the guns. On 60 Minutes, Dianne Feinstein. Okay.
Incredible.
The arrogance of these people, and why are they so arrogant? Because they can bully their way up and down the United States, left and right, because no one does anything. And voting him out isn't working, because obviously Barbara Boxer got another term, even though Fiorina wouldn't have been that much better, but she would have been so new to the game that she basically would be just pigeonholed. But the thing is that voting him out isn't working, and I don't think we have another election cycle. So I'm saying, okay, I don't have a solution, but let's develop a message and start with that and see where that goes. Okay, now, Bob, here's the deal, okay? This is one of these things where if Gary and I were to come up with a message, would you sign it and send it?
Well, if I agreed with the message.
Okay. And so, Gary, what kind of message would you write that Bob would agree on?
Well, the petition that is linked on in the plan is the message that I wrote last year regarding that, and it doesn't get into specifics. It doesn't deal with financial and all that. What it does is deal with remedies. It's not Band-Aids. It's trying to cure the whole thing. And why did I do that, though, is the question. And the problem is, what model do we have to approach something like this?
Well, let me one more point here, okay, before we go to break. The framers of the Constitution, and I'm just going by hearsay history lessons. Those people exactly didn't like each other, but they all agreed on one thing, that they were getting the screw-up job by George, and they were getting tired of it, and so they could put all of the differences apart long enough to pin a document. And I understand that there was many changes, you know, that Hancock had. In fact, Hancock was not the original author of it. He was I think the third author of it, and one of the reasons why they finally threw it to him, because he had the best penmanship.
Jefferson, not Hancock.
Or Jefferson, sorry. But so we're at this point now where guys like Gary and guys like Bob and guys like me need to sit down and iron out this stuff and come up with some resolutions or some points of argument and articles that we can put to paper and get enough people to sign and start sending this stuff out. Because that's where you start. You start at that point. You start with pen and paper, and if that doesn't work, then you go to lead and powder. Right?
Well, I agree. And, you know, I was in business, too. I had my own business for years, and I've been management most of my career. One thing I learned a long time ago is if I go to a meeting with somebody, whether it's a client in my survey business or the county or city or anybody, I always had a piece of paper, because I found if you have a piece of paper in front of you, you've got something to start with. You can strike things out and add things to it. Now, that's when I wrote the petition. I was trying to get as much input as I could at the time. It's written as a foundation, and if you read the petition, the wording is considerably different than the Declaration of Dissolution of Government. But it's a piece of paper, and it's there. I don't have any pride of authorship in it. I think it's a good foundation to start from. But
one of the things,
you know, maybe you have
some
ideas that need to be added to that.
Well, that's why I wanted to have Bob on the show, is because I want someone who had run for Congress, you know, to add his input and so forth. And because 230-odd years ago, that's what these people did. They managed to get together in the same room and not kill each other and put together a document that they all agreed to and signed with the risk of losing their lives, okay? Because that's what intelligent, wise men do.
Well, that's true. But when they did that, they also had a structure of a government in mind. Who would lead, how it would be ran, and what would happen.
Okay, well, that's why we need to have your opinion and Gary's opinion and mine and other people's opinion, because not any one person can do this. Otherwise, we'd have a monarchy, right?
But we have people out there.
They didn't have a structure of government in mind. In fact, they didn't come up with the Articles of Confederation for quite some time.
Yeah, the Articles
All
didn't
they
come
were
until
was a collective at that point.
1881,
Pardon?
I think. 1881 was the Articles.
Yeah. 1781.
17, excuse me. Yeah, 1781.
They worked just under the, you know, a cooperative agreement, basically, under the Continental Congress, with representation from each of the states, and they put out their levies, and they did their job. The Articles of Confederation obviously failed in 17.
Let's go to break. We got a break. We only got 15 minutes left, because we got to do the trivia thing, even though I think someone's already aced that one. So my scores suck in real time. So let's go to break. yeah, these guys are a lot smarter than I am. And we'll be coming right back, all right? Okay, we're back. We're back with the final half hour show. Okay, so let's, Bob, can you back up to where we were talking about 2 minutes ago?
Well, we were talking about, to your listeners, we were talking about a rational dialogue, taking this further to the national level, discussing this matter, how we move forward into changing our nation back to a stronger, more constitutional, where they're listening to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the issue. There's other dialogue out there of let's change, let's do revolution, let's do it now, you know, the guns and everything. The reality is to what numbers would be there. I don't see anything out there, the will of the people, right there out there, that would even remotely say that that would even be successful. Now, Gary disagrees with that.
Well, on my blog, there's a Lucy Hosmer's diary, which had to do with April 18th, April 19th, 1775. And I'm trying to find another letter that I ran across a while back. Actually, Nord Davis gave me both of them. But in my trying to get back to the nuts and bolts of history, the documents written by little people at the time, one thing that was very common and is pretty well presented in a movie called April Morning, which is based on a book by Howard Fast, a lot of people felt on April 18th that there's no way we'll ever take on the British government. Something changed their mind on the 19th, and that growth was very slow out of that. But let's go back before then. The revolution started with just handfuls of people in New York and Boston. People would tar and feather the tax collector. A lot of times the tarring and feathering resulted in death. They tore down Hutchinson's house. They tore down warehouses. All these illegal acts. They even dumped away probably the equivalent of about $3 million worth of tea into the salt water in Boston Harbor. These are acts, illegal acts by any laws. Destruction of private property, kidnapping, murder, or at least homicide as a result of the kidnapping. But it was a handful of people. And then finally on April 19th, 78 men stood on Lexington Green? They didn't expect a fight. They were just there for a show. But once the issue crystallized and people were all through all the colonies were faced with a decision, and that decision is, which side am I on and to what extent? First, they chose the side. And as time required or warranted, they kept choosing a greater and greater extent until finally about, some say 30% of the country was behind the effort. But it grew from a handful of people. It's not a matter of getting everybody at once. It won't work that way. It can't work that way. What matters is you have two things growing. One is disenchantment. Well, three things. One is the disenchantment. Two is beginning to form into committees of safety so that there is representation on the local level that can replace the royal government or an abandoned government. And number three is people to begin acting so that there's reality to the situation, not just talk. Bravery is easy at a distance, but bravery is a lot more difficult when you're closer to it. And so those three elements together, growing slowly, became the elements back then that came together in what eventually became the United States of America. Disenchantment. And if we look at the patriot community, we're all at different levels. I mean, I've been involved in this actively, really actively, since Waco. I went to Waco. It was a big mistake. It changed my life. I gave up my business and everything. So I'm pretty dyed in the wool for 17 years. There are other people that just because of the economic crunch last year began getting interested in what the hell's wrong with government. So we've got this whole string of people that are ready to pick up a rifle and other people that are ready to go down to the ballot box and support the Tea Party candidate and everybody in between.
Well, let me throw something out there. 7 years ago in the state of California, we had a recall election. And we recalled Gray Davis and inserted the governor. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I make fun of
Frank Panfire.
I have a friend of mine who's from Arizona, and I made fun that, well, you guys had, you know, Napolitano as your governor. And he goes, well, yeah, you had Schwarzenegger. And I said, well, you're right. I don't really have anywhere to go with that argument. So anyway, so the whole point of the recall was the fact that California was broke down. And Gray Davis was going to double DMV fees. Now, you all know California is a car culture state, so forth. And Schwarzenegger said, I will fix the DMV fees. And he got a recall and got elected as governor. Now, I don't know the legality of a recall. There was no constitutionality test on that whatsoever, which really shocked me to no end that Gray Davis didn't challenge it on constitutional grounds and so forth. But there is now a point in contention that you can have a recall election and replace an existing sitting elected government official, the governor of the state of California. So even if it went to the Supreme Court, since the fact already happened and there's a point in contention that it did happen and so forth, it can happen again. So who's to say that we don't have a recall election and recall the president, the secretary of the House, the Senate Majority Leader, and so forth like that? Now I'm going to point this question to you, Bob, because you went through this process and so forth. So I want to give me your ideas on that.
To do the recall election right now, you don't have the support to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just don't have the support. The questions need to be, you know, what about the unions? You know, what about the SEIU? What about George Soros? What about, you know, the power that's there, and what about the media? You know, Bill Clinton was impeached, but he wasn't even sanctioned.
Yeah.
So, you know, the reality is, you wouldn't have the support right now.
Okay, but let me ask you. California recalled Gray Davis, and he wasn't that bad of a governor. He just, you know, he had like three bad governors, you know, first. And so, you know, I don't know why when any sane man would want to take that job and so forth. But the thing is that, so it was done in California, and I understand what you're saying, there would be no support and so forth, but from a constitutional standpoint, there's no reason that we couldn't do that, okay? I mean, there was rumors of replacing Obama with the Article 4 of the 25th Amendment, okay? But you're saying we couldn't get support for a recall election, but why couldn't we do the effort to get the support? Do you think that we're that far down the road that's just not going to be happening? That's not reality?
Well, no, I don't think that at all. I mean, I'm not saying that it's, you know, not worth the time and effort. Here's a question I throw back on you. How long would it take, do you feel, from grassroots, nuts and bolts, getting it done, and getting it before and actually doing a recall election, how long of a process is that? And is that process more than 2 years? And if it is, then why don't we put another candidate up there to elect other than Obama?
I think it could be done in 4 months if the right people were involved in the process.
Wow.
Let me give an estimate on the time. I think 60 days after you got the press involved and supporting the matter.
Okay, so that's a really good point, because I know if it was replacing Obama, Murdoch would be all over that shit, right? Fox News, they'd be all over that like stink on, or is it right on rice? Okay, right? But the problem is that the candidate that would be replacing Obama would be Murdoch's boy.
Well, there lies the question.
There lies the rub, huh? Therein lies the rub.
In charge.
Therein lies the rub.
So, you know, we get up, we do this, and then who's put in charge?
Okay.
And
what I'm saying is that you're saying throw out arguments, throw out petitions, throw out situations other than lead and powder, and I'm doing that. And you're coming back to me saying that, well, there's this in a way and there's that in a way. And by the fact that you're saying that, what you're telling me is that there really isn't going to be a way other than lead and power eventually. Because there are too many personal agendas and too many people in power involved, like the Murdochs and you know, who control the medias and the people that control the unions, like, you know, the SEIU and AFL-CIO and so forth. There are too many entities with too much power that are in the way of other than, I don't want to use the term violence, but I say non-physical confrontations into our getting our message across?
Sure. Now, here's the reality, and you said in power. The power is the key to this. Who has the power? Now, there's billions of dollars to be made on all sides of the issue. The problem is this. Everybody, you know, the enemy that's an enemy of my enemy is a friend of mine.
Correct.
You know? And the reality is if you go and you attack any of those enemies, then the question becomes, who's in charge? And who's ever in charge, do you want them in charge, and will they have the power? And the problem is we, you know, I look at a constitution, and I say, well, you know, we have the right to get rid of our representatives through elections. Well, we're all disillusioned with that because we don't see it happen. We don't see that, you know, if Bob Ranch wants to run and he can raise $200,000, well, they can put somebody up with $20 million.
Yeah.
You see, and there's the problem. The problem is the media. You know, we got to.
They wouldn't give Ron Paul an argument in two races ago.
You didn't even hear, you know, the internet. We heard of Ron Paul. Those that supported Ron Paul knew him via the internet.
Yeah.
The reality.
And the reason they didn't want him on there, because he was going to blow everybody's shit apart.
And, you know, Ron Paul has a lot of supporters out there.
But he's still not an electable individual. Because one reason is he doesn't support the status quo.
Well, and another reason is because we say who's electable and who's not electable.
Right.
And that's a huge problem that I have with the media, because the media will clear.
Yeah, Bob, but see, the thing is that we're saying the same things in different directions and so forth.
Well, we are in agreement. That is correct.
You know, I'm saying that. Well, let's have a recall.
Suppose we got 50.
Let's have a recall, and you're saying that won't work because of the media, okay? And I'm saying, okay, well, then if the media is going to be, let's take over the media. You ever see the movie V? Let's find some guy who's really good at hacking shit, and we'll just get in there and put our own tapes on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and so forth. Okay, you know, I mean, well, Julian and Sasha tried to do that, and now look where that got them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I'm saying is that while I love the intellectual intercourse that we're having as far as and how to restore the republic and back to constitutional ways and so forth, you're telling me, and you keep coming back to me, that there are too many pitfalls, cliffs, and uncrossable rivers in the way.
I'm saying that there's a lot of sides out there wanting to take power. Power corrupts.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And the thing is that we are running out of time. Right? Do you not agree? Can we all agree on that?
We agree on it.
Okay. But we can't quit. We can't give up, can we?
No.
Let me throw something in. I hate to undermine the possibility of a change through the election. But let's say we had 200 Ron Pauls in the House and 40 Ron Pauls in the Senate. What would change?
The Federal Reserve would go away.
No, it wouldn't.
Why wouldn't it?
200 in the House and 40 in the Senate.
All right. Okay. So I see where you're getting at. All right. So let's say we had 60 in the Senate.
Until you have,
let's say we had 60 in the Senate and 270 in the House.
Right. What he's saying for everybody out there is we don't have the majority. The Ron Pauls won't have the majority. The opposition will have the supermajority. So we won't have a saying even if we had 200 in the House, 40 in the Senate.
Right, and why would we reasonably expect to have the 51% in both houses?
But what's the reason behind that? Why would that be?
the power elite, the control of the two political parties. We have one political party that goes by two different names. They're both going
Bob
in the
and
same
I have
way.
Had this conversation back in, I think, March, Bob.
That's right, March and April.
Yeah, it's the same thing. They just have a different color tie.
Right, and so the only way most of the Tea Party candidates got in was to carry the Republican banner.
Well, and the Republicans needed the Tea Party because they were looking stinky and dead for a long time.
Right, and they wanted to get back to a majority somewhere.
Right, and the Tea Party did that for them, okay? So
right.
so that's done. Everybody's happy. You know, the bills are all paid. We got it made in the shade, and nothing has changed. And nothing is going to change in the next 2 years. I mean, Bob, do you think anything is going to change in 2 years?
I think that with the exception of some bills and some things being defunded.
I would take that as a no.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reality is not totally to be used.
Let me suggest that even if there is some defunding, that the worsers are going to be far greater than the betters.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The worser. Keith Oberlin's going to be able to do a lot more worser people.
Yeah, what we're dealing with is we're climbing a mountain, and every three steps right. forward, we take two steps right. back. But to compound that, the mountain is growing 5 feet a year.
Yeah. Well, my point is that, you know, for the past hour and 53-odd minutes, we've managed to have, I think, a pretty good radio show, you know, in my mind. And we managed to cover a lot of material that needed to be covered. And I think this is material that doesn't get covered, okay? This is the kind of conversations that people need to be having at the dinner table, at the water cooler, at the bar, wherever. But it's not happening. But you know what? It can start with three people and branch out. What do you think, Gary? What do you think, Bob? You think that we could take this conversation and have it again and take it to the next level? Could you take this conversation, Bob, and have it with people on your mailing list and so forth and maybe send this recorded, the archives, and say, hey, listen to this and tell me what you think? Nothing came out of it other than the fact that we had a conversation about a lot of things that are wrong and about a lot of things that aren't going to work, okay? But the thing is, we had the conversation, and we need more people to have this conversation. That much I know is true.
Well, I'd be honored to do it.
Okay. Do you think, Gary, that's just it? I mean, this conversation needs to happen 3 million times.
Yes. Nope. And I will be sending out links to where I set it up on my page as well, as I always do, because it does need to get out.
Right. And maybe common sense can come back. I don't give it a lot of odds, but maybe common sense can come back. But if enough people can listen to conversations like this and start their own, then maybe we have a chance at it. Because I can tell you right now, all right, if we don't enact changes between now and Christmas next year, we're screwed. The United States of America.
I thought you just realized that we can't.
No. It's not that we can't, okay? It's that there's insurmountable odds against us being able to do it. But what's the beauty of the Americans has always been, what have we always championed as an American? The underdog effort, right?
I suppose so. Futility, though?
Well, are we at futility? That's the whole thing. You know, that's the point of our conversation. I don't think we're at futility just yet. I think we're getting close to futility, okay? But I don't think we're at futility yet, okay? It's like we're not ready for lead and powder just yet. We're getting closer and closer and closer every day, okay? So, but it's our responsibility as sentient, intelligent individuals to know where we are and where we're going, to try to do everything we can to engender the population to say, look, this is what the end result's going to be if we don't do something now. That's our responsibility. You took that upon yourself, 17-odd years ago at Waco. Bob took that upon himself when he decided to run for Congress, okay? It's one of these things that, okay, well, you know, because you didn't make it as a congressman doesn't mean that the responsibility doesn't exist anymore. Bob, you're still responsible because you're aware.
Oh,
Gary, you're still responsible because you're aware. just like I am.
Exactly, and I'm very much, active right now in this.
I would hope so.
In my political groups, in my church groups, also in my universities, I'm very active on this issue. You know, there's a lot of things that are happening. You know, there's a whole breed of constitutional lawyers coming out of Christian universities, you know, to attack the status quo. You know, there's a groundswell. But here's the issue that we really got to address is, you know, we need to get people like Joe Racer into the mainstream media. We need a mainstream media outlets. We need funding. You need funding to do this. You know, the reality is if you just have, you know, a handful of people listening to this dialogue, then those people have to commit to taking that to the next level.
You know what? I hope everybody is listening to that. I see Matt there and Jason and Craig and Snowball and Cowgirl and Harley's there. And, you guys, you're regulars on here. You need to be out there spreading this word. This is one of the things that Freebird was a little disappointed about. Indiana Patriot, you as well, okay? You guys need to get out there and get people to listen to these shows, not just mine, but, you know, other shows as well, okay? Because we're at that point now, if you want to remain Americans as part of the United States of America, you better get off your ass and do something quick because the end result is not going to be the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
All right, listen. Closing statements. We got a couple more minutes, and I got to give some knives away. Lead dispenser is just, he can't stand it because he's got the answer. So, like a kid at Christmas Eve, right? Oh, shake that package.
he had to go all the way back to the 1700s for your answer, though.
Yeah, pretty much. So,
you got to love it.
Yeah, I
listen.
Do.
We're all patriots here. We're all looking to make the change. We're all looking to make this a stronger nation and a better nation. And for that, I say God bless to everybody to their efforts. And just because we may not see eye to eye on all aspects does not mean that it does not need to be done. And it just means that more dialogue needs to happen and come to some sort of agreement on how. But this absolutely must happen. We must right now commit to help making this nation a more stronger nation, and how we go about it is the dialogue, but it needs to be done.
Yeah, and we need to step up the efforts.
And I want to thank Joe Racer. God bless Joe Racer. And Gary, it's my pleasure to meet you tonight.
Yeah,
fine to meet you, Bob.
All right, Bob, Gary, guys, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll have this conversation again with some more input. Now, you guys need to go off into your respective haunts and so forth, and continue this discussion offline, because it's guys like you that are going to make this successful. Now, because if we give up, if I give up and Gary gives up and Bob gives up, then you know what? Then what recourse does the rest of the people have to continue on?
I absolutely agree.
All right? Gary, a pleasure as always.
Thank you again, Joe.
All right. And Bob,
and thank you, listeners.
Bob is the long time, too long, I think, that we had a chance to talk. So I'd like to bring you back in a couple, 3-4 weeks, and maybe things have changed.
Now that we got the technical issues out of the way, I'd be more
than What you need to do is put your picture on there, because Gary's got his smiling face on there. So you put your picture on there, because it blinks back and forth when you're talking. I know who's talking.
All right.
Yeah, and Joe's, you know, he's got that question mark in place of his head, so I'm wondering if he doesn't have any answers or what.
I have questions. I never said I had answers, okay?
God bless Joe Racer. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Bob. Gary, good night.
Good night.
All right, that was a pretty good show, I got to think. Okay, so who's got the answer to the question? Come on, you're itching at the feet. Call in now so I can give you your present, Christmas present or so forth. Who's got, okay, I'll say it. The real unhappy person is the one who leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. Come on. Someone's got it. Hurry, we only got a couple minutes. And I'm going to play some music till someone comes up and gives me the answer. Who's this?
Wolfgang Bongo.
Hold on. Who's calling?
Please.
You got to turn your radio down. You there? Hello? Who's calling? Hello?
Are you ready?
Well, first of all, who's calling?
This is End of the Rope Farm.
Jason!
What?
Didn't you already win something?
No, we tried last trivia question, but you were wrong on your answer, so we didn't win.
No, actually, I am right, but the internet's wrong. But okay, go ahead.
All right. What we got here is the answer to your question, the quote. The man is Johann Wolfgang von Goethe.
You got to pronounce it correctly now.
Oh, come on.
Come on.
Goethe.
It is called Goethe.
Goethe. Okay. Goethe. Do you want to hear the quote?
I gave you the quote.
The really unhappy person is the one who leaves undone what they can do and starts doing what they don't understand. No wonder they come to grief.
Oh, gosh. You're killing me. The internet. So how's the kids? And how's your lovely wife?
Oh, wonderful. Bridget looked that up. She missed the first two questions when you blurted them out earlier.
Yeah.
And so just as you're doing it this time, she looked it up. It took her 5 minutes. Not even 5 minutes. It took her like 45 seconds.
Yeah, but you guys are experts. You're aces. But Led Dispenser, he made the mistake of printing it on the chat, but I think he's a prior winner. So, but anyway, what did you think of the show?
I thought it was a good show. I thought it was a good dialogue, and I'm happy to hear about the, someone who is in politics to speak what they feel about it. And of course, Gary's insights are always good.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate the fact that you kept driving home the question. Well, how are we going to get out of this? What are we going to do? And what would you guys do?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was good.
Well, this is the kind of dialogue that needs to get spread amongst other people. Other people need to talk about this. And because if we don't, well, you know what the end result that is going to be and so forth. Okay, well, having said that, it's time for dinner time. Jason, I'll talk to you later. Congratulations. You got a pretty... What, did you get a knife? I don't know where the hell Free went. You got yourself... Oh, a USMC style fighting knife with heavy duty sheath, 12 inches over.
Right on.
You are over 18, right? So you got to be over 18.
Yeah.
And so forth. And then hopefully one day we'll get Craig over there. He'll show you how to use it.
Right on. Sounds good. Thank you, brother.
All right, buddy. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Thanks for checking in and listening. I think it was a pretty good show. And like I said, it's been a while since I've had Bob on. It's guys like him that we need to have in the White House to bring a little reason and sanity back into our world and so forth. So with that, I will be... Oh, I'm going to be on the Intel Hub on Blog Talk Radio tomorrow, and I will have the Freebird put the link on and so forth. We're going to be talking about the Gulf Stream dying and so forth. I think I'm on for an hour. I'm going to finalize the detail. And we're going to be doing a simulcast with the Intel Hub. They'll be simulcasting our show, and I'll be doing, I think, a regular Wednesday show and so forth. And I hope to see you all there. It'll be a while before I get the hookup and so forth. I'll give you the details earlier. And with that, I'm going to say good night. God bless. And, oh, one more thing. If Pastor Jeff is listening from my local church, thank you very much for coming by. And I really appreciate it. Good night. God bless. And we'll see you tomorrow.